Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. Hello, Breakthrough Success listeners. I just wanted you all to know before the episode actually starts, I've been working a little bit behind the scenes to give you something really special. So a while ago, I wrote my book, Content Marketing Secrets, which helps people create, promote, and optimize their content for growth and revenue. And I just put the finishing touches together to offer that for free to anyone who is interested. So if you want your free copy of Content Marketing Secrets, all you have to do is head over to markgoberti.com/book. Now, let's jump right into the episode. Have you ever wondered how to become a thought leader, an influencer? There's so many ways to describe it, but today's guest prefers the word thought leader because he is the co-founder of Thought Leader Academy. So we're going to be talking a lot about how to become a thought leader. That's going to be the focus. But in addition to co-founding this academy, which, by the way, is a membership site designed to help you grow and market your mission-driven personal brand, he is also a TEDx speaker. He's been on that stage 3 times, and he's a cultural diversity influencer. And his ultimate goal is to build the next set of global leaders by teaching individuals how to communicate effectively across cultures and communicate with impact. So today's guest for episode 234 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Teo Roxon. Teo, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Pleasure's mine, and I love your energy. I've got to match that throughout this throughout this interview. So it's a pleasure to be on here. Excited to talk about thought leadership, and congrats on your success with your podcast.
Teo, I'm really looking forward to diving into this interview. Like, being a thought leader is just something that so many people strive to do. It's that ability to just build your audience, have that impact, which, I mean, I feel like we only get to live once. The amount of impact we create, it's just something so important. I could literally go on about this, but I'd like to get some background on you before we go into becoming a thought leader. So I'm wondering if you could share with us why the Thought Leader Academy? What inspired that?
So ever since I was a kid, I've known that I wanted to do something on a global level. But the only problem was I didn't quite realize or understand how I could do it with the resources around me. I'm from Nigeria, and I grew up in 5 countries and 4 continents by the time I was 17. So a lot of what I was growing up with was, you know, the identity crisis and figuring out how to sort of find my story within different cultures. And in that process of trying to figure out who I was and how to solve problems by being myself, I sort of just stumbled down this path of studying leaders and other people who had done it. And that sort of, you know, sparked a lot of my interest in what I was doing. And I always tell anyone who's trying to build a business, who's trying to make an impact, is really have an idea of who you are, what your passions are, but also the problem that you want to solve. And my first problem that I wanted to solve was the leadership crisis that we have in the world. In addition to growing up in 4 countries and 5 continents, I also grew up in 2 military dictatorships. And so I saw firsthand what it was like when people's civil liberties were taken away from them. And so, you know, essentially that became my life mission: help people take back their civil liberties and understand how they can make an impact in the world.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, like, the diverse background you have, and some good places, some not as good places. And I mean, that's definitely helped you, I'm sure, in the long term to you're really committed to building that next set of global leaders, which is something that doesn't just come right away. It's probably through all that experience and you wanting to have that really big impact. And you talked about the identity crisis, which is really interesting, because the moment you get situated in one country or one group of people, all of a sudden you're going somewhere else. So it's you kind of constantly have to start all over. And I know that people on Breakthrough Success, it's not like they're going to they're living in 5 different countries and 17 years or not going all around the place. But I feel like there are people who do have that identity crisis where they know who they are a little bit, but they don't really know what are the main things they should be doing in their lives? What are the big missions they should be going after? So, and also like who we are, like a story that we have. So I'm wondering, how can we get out of that state of identity crisis that we may have regarding ourselves? Some people may not just know at all. Some people, they just may have so many things that form their identity, so they can't form a clear one. So how do we get out of that identity crisis on the road to becoming a thought leader?
So the way to do it is basically by finding your driving passion and unmasking yourself. And so unmasking yourself involves the internal self-awareness as well as external self-awareness. So with the internal self-awareness, I always, whenever I have clients, I have them do this exercise where they go back to their earliest memories, earliest thing they can remember, and basically jot down every single pivotal moment that they've had in their life and dictate what happened. Why was this pivotal? What were you feeling then? How did that make you feel? And the goal here is, as you're going through and you're aging up to where you currently are, you start to see, you know, trends and the reasons why you chose different things. Even if you don't feel like you necessarily did anything that had, a trend involved, just you being able to see the way you chose, the way you made decisions, why you made decisions, and the decisions you made usually gives you one part of the clue. And once you have that, I have people do the external self-awareness, which involves asking people that they've worked with or people they're close with and people that maybe they've come to contact with on a casual level. So colleagues, friends, and family members that have, you know, that have had some sort of relationship with you. And I have them ask a series of 5 to 10 questions about, you know, what they think they'll be good at, what they think their strengths are, what they think their weaknesses are, what celebrity they remind them of, or things like that. And the whole idea is that you can see yourself one way, another person can see yourself one way, but understanding how you see yourself, how others see you, and the impact of your actions is the first clue to sort of figuring out what exactly it is your purpose is. Once you know who you are and what exactly the way you're perceived, you get a better idea of what kind of audience you can, you know, relate to and what kind of potential areas of opportunity you have. And then after I have that, that's when we get them working towards having them attach their expertise to a world problem. But it doesn't start, Mark, without you understanding who you are and how you're perceived, because you can think one thing, you can create a whole product, you can create a whole brand, but if the world doesn't see you that way, it's a very, very interesting, problematic situation where you could be doing a lot of work and missing the connecting piece.
And it's really interesting how you think about like the work you're doing and how the world sees you, because if you want to pursue a different venture that may be different from the way people see you, you should figure out how to bridge the two together so that it's easier for people to see you in this new light. And one of the things for all thought leaders is that there's marketing that's essential. Like, you have the thoughts, you have the insight, but you've got to be able to get it in front of people. And there are many ways, like, we could go on all day just listing different ways to market yourself. There's podcasting, like now, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, so many different ways. So I know it's different for each person, but how can we choose the best opportunities that are best for us?
Well, if you know, Mark, we can even go another way. So what launched my current career right now is podcasting, right? And I had a simple question that I wanted to solve. Why do we live in a globalized world and a digitalized world and still have a problem communicating across cultures? That was my question. And my mission was to sort of figure out how to teach people how to embrace a global mindset. And the way that I was going to do it was to interview people that grew up in similar backgrounds that I did, but also people that have had success. And I wanted them to tell their stories and share expertise and tips on how they were able to turn identity crisis into something, or how they were able to bridge cultural divides. And doing that positioned me as a thought leader in the space, because I was associated with people that I was interviewing, but it also gave me an insight into their minds. I was essentially going to school every day. I'm sure with your podcast, as you've interviewed several people, you've started to see things and you started to be privy to several information that you could say, wow, this is essentially a university here I'm building. This is an academy of sorts. And so if you're thinking about starting something, or you're not sure where you should start, think about whether you can be a content creator, you can be a curator, or you can be a connector. As a content creator, you could do that with podcasting, you could do that with writing, you could do that with video. Is there something that you can create to sort of answer your question? If you have a question that you want to solve or personal pain point, why not go around and find people that can answer that question and you create the platform that has that? Or if you're an expert in the field, share your expertise with whatever platforms that you feel most comfortable with. If you want to be a curator, which is maybe you don't feel like you have the expertise, but you feel like you could go around getting the pieces of information in your industry or your perceived area of interest, you could curate several things in your industry that makes it easy for anyone else who's interested in that as well. And you become the intended destination of I don't know, maybe you care about sub-Saharan countries in Africa and their governments. You could maybe create several tabs in your website about Nigeria, about South Africa, about Kenya, and you could have every week a new country doing something like that. Or if you're a social person, you could be a connector. Maybe in your network, you know people that know people, and you're able to see trends, and you can say, "You, Mark, you should meet this person. I see how you can work there." Doing all these three things allows you to get closer to some level of value producing or value production that will inevitably benefit you as a thought leader. But whatever you choose to do, either create content, either curate content, or connect someone to another person. That's what I always say.
And I really like that that flow for deciding where to go. And the podcasting, like what Teo was saying about the podcasting, was really spot on. Where like if you have like it's great for like you provide the content, you address your listeners' pain points, but in a sense you're also addressing your pain points. You're addressing your questions as well, and that's also the questions that a lot of your listeners have. And like, I know you didn't podcast always, so I'm wondering, with all the opportunities that are available to us, how did you end up choosing podcasting among like all the other ones?
It was a funny story, because I had come out of this situation where I found myself in a job I hated. You know, when I first came to the United States in Virginia, I pretty much knew I wanted to do something at a global level, as I said earlier, but I applied to over 85 jobs when I graduated, and they all said no. You know, they're like, "You're too young, you're not a citizen, you're not that." And so I randomly, you know, I was like, I reached out to other people that had given me internships before and said, I need a job, because, you know, I'm, you know, this is the only way I can secure like a work visa, and otherwise I'll have to, you know, go back home. And eventually one of them said, "Hey, yeah, why don't you come do social media for us?" And I went there with the intention to do social media, but they said, "No, you're going to do sales, and your quota is $10,000. You have to make that every month. No orientation, figure it out." And so that became my life about a year and a half, up until one day when I was driving to work in my burgundy Toyota Camry. And I got to the part where the road merged into the highway, stepped in the accelerator pedal, and was cruising like I was supposed to, 60 miles per hour. Then my lane gets cut into half because this neighboring car had lost control. And so I was now swerving out of the way so I didn't get hit. And I smashed into the left guardrail, boom, hit one car, boom, two cars, boom, right guardrail, boom, back to the left guardrail, this time with such impact that my car lifted up. And for a brief moment, I thought I was about to flip over this bridge. And as my life flashed before me, there was only one question that came to mind. I was 22 years old, August 22, 2012. And I remember the question was, "Have you done everything you said you were going to do? Have you done everything you said you were going to do?" I had given up at that moment because in my mind, I thought I tried 85 times. What was the point? But something about almost dying wakes you up and allows you to realize just how short life is. And so my instincts kicked in. I slammed the brakes and I somehow managed to get out of the car unscathed. My car was totaled. There were two other cars hit, but I was alive. And so I quit my job, moved to New York City, and began this process of this podcasting, because to me, my biggest role models are still, you know, Oprah Winfrey and the late Nelson Mandela. I loved how Oprah used media to make people feel like they were part of a world, and also encourage people to live their best life. But I also loved how Nelson Mandela was unapologetic about who he was, but also passionate about education. And so I thought about the best way to marry those two things, create a media platform that educates people. I knew that, you know, going to NBC or getting that probably had a lot of red tapes. And so I've always been an avid listener of podcasting, and I was like, what is the lowest barrier? What is the biggest media platform that I could use that has the lowest barrier of entry, which allows me to talk? And podcasting was just, you know, starting to get a lot of notoriety. So I decided to launch my own podcast. And that's the story of how that happened. I would podcast while I was getting my MBA. So go to MBA class at night, podcast for the rest of the day.
Wow, that's a really strong level of commitment to go for the MBA at night and podcast in the day. And yeah, like the story behind that, I mean, the car crash, I mean, it's usually these situations where you feel like you're done. You feel like that line is going to be drawn on the sand, and whatever's there, you're not going to be able to do anything about it. That really gets you to get ignited as you go towards goals. It's definitely a lot different. I mean, I've heard it from people. I've never experienced it, but it's very different for
And I certainly don't hope people have to have a near-death experience to wake up, but that's the thing about life. You know, I think with life, as for any of us, a lot of it is about answering these two questions: who you are and what you want to do. And the path between who you are and who you become or what you want to do is essentially what life is all about. A lot of times people take several detours because they might know who they are and they might know what they need to do in order to become the person that they aspire to be, but they're too scared. And there are other times people might not actually know who that person is because they haven't, you know, had the resources to know who that person is, or they haven't committed to doing the hard work to unmasking themselves. And what me and my co-founder Amanda try to do is to get people to really do that hard step. And there's some things you might find that about yourself that you might not like. Maybe there's some level of complacency you've gotten used to. Maybe there's some things that you've had to let go of. But a lot of us have become too used to the idea that, oh, it's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen tomorrow. So I'm not going to do anything today. And if we don't create that sense of urgency now, it's going to become 3 weeks, then 4 years, then 10 years, then, you know, the end of your life. And you're going to kick yourself in the shin and say, I had a moment in my life when I should have done that, and I wish I did it. And that's what we're trying to rid people of.
I really like the idea of like how you mentioned, you don't want to like look back and say like, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And not just from your standpoint, like now you've had that experience and you want more people to ask those same types of questions. Like, did I do everything I'm supposed to do? And right, not have those like, oh, I wish I did this type of moments at the end. So like that's something we should all be thinking about. But one of the things that I want to also tackle from the thought leader standpoint, I'm wondering if you could share with us what you believe holds most people back from becoming a thought leader.
Fear of failure. So just the same thing that I had before the accident. My biggest fear before the accident was fear of failure. And then after that became fear of not achieving my potential. People are afraid of being held accountable for something. Think about it, Mark, if you're a thought leader, that means you're claiming that, you know, you're a leader in an industry or something, and you could fail. And that means more voices and more eyes on you. And if more eyes are on you, there's a level of scrutiny that not many people are, you know, willing to deal with. And if you do fail, you could fall flat on your face, and that could be embarrassing. And if you don't, you know, it's great. But that idea that you could fail, that idea that you could be vulnerable in front of a large group of people, is a lot of times what holds people back. And there's also this level of fear of success. People always talk about the fear of failure, like I mentioned earlier, but success is something that not many people talk about because that, you know, we're not really taught how to deal with success. We're taught about the end goal. Yeah, this is what success will look like, but what happens when you deal with success? How do you build on it? How do you make sure you're not complacent? How do you make sure you deal with the tension? How do you make sure you keep your sanity? And so I think there's an element of a lot of that. And I also don't think that the way education systems have been populated in today's world promote a lot of critical thinking. I think, you know, we get used to the idea of, you know, you go to school, you get told what to do, and then that's it. And I love school. I mean, I got my MBA, so I know a lot about school. But what I always talk about with education systems is that I wish they created more opportunities for students to create and to come up with stuff themselves. Because I think if you cultivate that habit early, you're going to be able to develop some level of risk aversion that allows you to be bold enough to share your ideas and not regurgitate someone else's idea because you heard it. And once we get to that level of we're not afraid of failure, we're not afraid of success, but we're also not afraid of being critical thinkers, we're going to have more people try to share their opinions and try to solve a different problem in today's world. But that's just my thought. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not sure that I am.
And just to share one of my thoughts, another thing, I've thought of this too, obviously, because there are people who during interviews and before interviews ask me about my choice about going to college. And if I were to add one thing, I would say a stronger focus on personal development. If I were a teacher, I would give them a daily assignment to write down three things they're grateful for each day. Just write it. And even if they have to do it in the class, they didn't do the homework the night before, just do it in the class. So that's something that I would do. Obviously, there are a lot of people with a lot of different thoughts, but that's just one of mine because I heard your thought I wanted to share also.
No. First of all, that's a great idea. I think personal development is ultimately what we're talking about. The idea of understanding who you are and daring to try new things. And it's ironic, if you think about it, Mark, where our generation has so many tools for us to self-educate. We have Google, we have books, we have audiobooks, we have everything that technically are free if we really are able to narrow down our areas of interest. A lot of times when I have a lot of one-on-one clients and I always ask, and they'll tell me the stuff they're interested in, and I always ask them, well, so what have you done to educate yourself on that? I was like, I don't know. I haven't done anything, but you could literally go to Google and find this information. Yeah, you're right. But I just didn't have the time. You know, you start to create all these things. And I always wondered, why is it that we have that mental barrier in our head where it's in front of us what we should do? Why don't we do that? And that goes back to that level of sense of urgency where we have to make sure that personal development has the highest priority. Critical thinking has the highest priority. And the problem that we want to solve has the highest priority. Ultimately, the people that are saying that they want to be thought leader, how important is it to them that they solve the problem that they say they want to lead that industry? And people have to ask themselves that question. You know, do we get comfortable with the salary or the school and all that? Or do we feel like if we don't use or champion our voices or talk about our experiences and try and save, cost here or other people's lives potentially, do we do that? Are we treating that with a level of importance it should be? If not, we wouldn't have the Seth Godins or the Nelson Mandelas or the people that chose to champion what they did. And so we have to ask ourselves those questions every day.
And I really love that you're giving us questions to ask ourselves. That is something that I usually ask at the end of each episode. What is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often? You've already given us so many great questions. And I believe if we really ask ourselves the right questions, we come up with the right answers that really ignite us towards taking action. You're giving us a lot of those right questions in addition to all the insights that you've already given us. And I can't help but you mentioned books. It's one of the ways that we can learn a lot. So I'm wondering if you could share with us three book recommendations that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
Mastery by Robert Greene. That's one. Oh, one of my favorite books of all time. I know everybody talks about The Alchemist, but it's about following your personal legend. I love The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. You're a huge Harry Potter fan, so all the Harry Potter books. But I want to think of a nonfiction third book. I know what I can think of. It's Principles by Ray Dalio. So I'd say Principles by Ray Dalio, Mastery by Robert Greene, and The Alchemist, as well as Harry Potter, if you're thinking of nonfiction, if you're thinking of, fiction rather. So, yeah.
Tayo, thank you for those great book recommendations. Those will all be in the show notes at markbury.com/234. And we'll also throw in content marketing secrets in the show notes as well. The link to that is markbury.com/book. That is a free book. Just pay shipping to get your copy. And one of the questions I also want to ask you, you've had several challenges throughout your journey. Could be said about all of us, but you with five countries before turning 17, other things. I'm wondering if you could share with us one of the big challenges you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
So in addition to the near-death experience, I am coming to New York City in a city that I knew no one. And on my path to creating the career that I have right now, I was fired twice and I was broke multiple times. And each of those times I was fired, I learned something new. But the first firing was, I remember, I was getting ready to enter my second year of my MBA program. And I got this consulting gig, and I was like, with a startup, I was like, oh, it's kind of exciting. I can finally save up money and build my podcast business and cross-cultural business. And there was a new regime. The head of marketing came in. She'd been watching me for a week. I guess she wasn't happy with what she saw. She said, hey, I'd like to talk to you. Brought me to the office. As soon as I sat down, it was very cliche, like the movies. We're going to have to let you go. And I remember just freezing and just not really hearing much after that. And she says, hey, by the way, when you go grab your computer, don't make a scene, just walk out. And so I grabbed my computer, and the first thing I saw, the first notification I saw there was, you've been signed out from your email. So they had already done this stuff before. And I remember feeling so embarrassed because I had never been fired before. And what happened after that was I started to launch the media arm of my business. And it just made me realize that if I didn't really focus on my business, other people could really start to tell me what to do. And I needed to focus on that. And so that's when the podcasting thing shifted to get even more contributors. And I started to really build a network. The second firing happened about a year and a half after I graduated from college. I was still trying to figure out and make money with the podcast. The podcast was is always done well. It's in 150 countries, but sometimes when you're sort of teaching people how to do stuff, you need to go through the brand building phase. And I was still in that phase. And so I was, doing the 9 to 5 and then 5 to 9 after. And so my boss at the time, who ironically is my mentor still, he just came up to me and said, you know, I'm going to let you go because you spend way more time on what I'm doing right now on this stuff. And I don't feel good about letting you stay here because I think you need to figure out how to make this a business. And I looked at him and said, oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to leave eventually, but I need to figure out how to pay rent. It's New York City. And he looked at me and said, Tyra, you're going to figure it out if this is what you want to do. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that's great to say, Rob, but come on. I need the money. And you said you figure it out. And so I got let go. And that year, I was able to get 3 TEDx talks. And the business, I guess it really skyrocketed because I really took what he said to heart. And I was like, I've really been half, I'm not going to use the word half button. I hadn't been, but. I should have really just put all my focus on it and really said, if I believe in myself, I shouldn't act scared by trying to have another job and do this. I shouldn't do the 2 jobs one way. There's some level, there's some time in your career when you could do that. But if you're claiming that this is the best way you can solve the problem, give it at least, 6 months to 1 year to really try and see it with all your focus. And once I did all my focus and I started to tell my story and brand myself into that, that was when I became recognizable as, a thought leader in the diversity and inclusion space. And it was because I was able to authentically tell my story and say, okay, this is what I've done and this is what I'm doing. And so, the 2 firings on the surface, made me broke in and were, they came at unpleasant times. But the good thing that I remember taking from each moment is that I didn't, it just made me want to work in my story even more. And so that's what I can say about that.
And that is a really great story that you go from getting fired to that figuring out in that 1 year. I'm wondering if you could take us a little deeper into that year where things start to click. You have you've been speaking at TEDx, 3 different stages, you have the network. So can you talk a little bit about how that particular transformation happened and how you were able to build a network?
The day that I got fired, I sat down, that exercise that I had people, I mentioned earlier about going through your life and all that. I basically made a list of all the things I had done. On the personal level, I knew the problem I wanted to solve. What is the problem I want to solve? You want to help people become better leaders by teaching them how to be communicators. That's always been the problem I want to solve. What is your personal story with this problem? I grew up in 5 countries, 4 continents. before 17? What are the problems you had personally, and how did you overcome them? So I wrote that down. What are the professional levels of success you had? You have a podcast that's heard in 150 countries. It's made certain lists, blah, blah, blah. And you've spoken at the World Bank before. And so I had all those things, made that into about three paragraphs. And then I created a list of people that would be interested in that type of problem solution that I could offer. So when you have a problem that you want to solve, make sure you also have another list of the people that hire for that problem. And so that boiled out to HR, to schools, and to potential conferences that talked about these things. And so I created my, hey, this is who I am, Ty Roczen. This is my personal story. Blah, blah, blah. This is my work, and this is focused on this. And here are some proofs of credibility. I would love to get on the phone to talk about, talk to you for 15 minutes. I would share that if that was a company. My goal was to speak there. And if it was to TEDx or a conference, I'd love for my application to be considered. I applied to over 18. Most of them said no, but then when I didn't hear back from a few, I remember following up with one of the TEDx gentlemen, and I said, "Hey, look, just following up. I didn't hear back." And the gentleman, this is after my 18th rejection, the gentleman said, "Hey, you're in. I'm sorry we didn't get back to you." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "If I didn't follow up, I wouldn't have been in." And so I guess me putting it back up to his face, he just saw that. And then I decided, that day I followed up with two others, and because I didn't know who I would hear back from. And then the other person said, "Hey, we like what you said. It fits with our theme one." And I was in this predicament where you can't give the same talk at two different TEDx events, and they were about 3 weeks apart. And I was freaking out in a good way, like, "Oh yeah, I got in." And then I started to freak out in a bad way, like, "I don't know what to talk about again." But I did that round enough, and then people, I did one thing, they loved it, and they said, and I started to get recordings of it, and then I started to get referrals. Once I started to get referrals, it started to go like that way. But if you go back to the TEDx said, "We love you." I did that. They loved it. And then the second one, I didn't have that talk, that title, until a week before, because they didn't like any of the ideas I was sending them. And that's still my most viewed talk to this day. I think it's almost 20,000 views or something like that. And it just happened randomly. The third TEDx talk, they found me. It was a private one, so it's not online. It's L'Oreal. And L'Oreal had heard about some of the, I guess they heard through word of mouth about my speaking and stuff, and said, "Hey, we heard about you. People loved your stuff. We'd love you to come talk about inner beauty. That's our theme this year." And once you start having that type of momentum and people start sharing your word, it becomes, it snowballs into that. And so, yeah, that's my first 3 weeks after getting fired. It was, I remember vividly not having any food and not money in my credit card. So I would go to all the co-working spaces that I knew that had some breakfast or something. And I'll wear my suit and I'll sit down there and I'll just be nodding heads because I knew the people. And I just have my computer typing in there, and they would assume that I was working. And I'll get up, every 3 hours or so, and just, fill my bowl up with cereal, eat it there. And then I'll be like, "Yep, I'm eating my meals today," and then I'll go home. Wow. But that was me for the first 3 weeks it was like a good 1 to 2 months before I was able to finally get paid for speaking engagements that helped me pay for rent and then continue to go from there. So,
yeah. Wow. I really like the idea of like reaching out is just something that is so important to do to get new opportunities, grow your audience. Like a lot of the people who grow their audiences, they are doing a lot of reaching out also. And I really like the story of how like the 18th try, you didn't give up, you and the follow-up made all the difference. And that's how you got the initial TEDx,
The first two, the follow-up was the difference. I wouldn't have gotten in. And that, I guess that speaks, I'm sure you do this when you follow up with people. People always, they get discouraged when they don't hear back, but follow up many times until you hear a response, I would say. I mean, and even if it's yes or no, but sometimes emails get lost. Sometimes people are testing you. I mean, I get pitched every day for guesting on a podcast, and it doesn't rank as high as important sometimes, if, you know, unless like maybe I've seen it like 4 or 5 times, because it's a way for me to filter what's important, because I get a lot of emails anyway. And so just don't give up.
Yeah, I really like that message. And I honestly think we'll wrap up on that. Don't give up, because I mean, it's such an important message. Like, things do get tough, but maybe the first 17 don't work. The 18th is the magic charm. And even then you have to follow up. So I think we're going to wrap up on that message. So if you guys want to learn more about Tayo, you can head over to thoughtleaderprogram.com/courses/membership. We will include a link to that for the Thought Leader Academy. So
yeah, and also my personal, if you want to find everything, my personal website is tyroxen.com. So you can just go to my personal website and then you can find out more.
That will also be in the show notes, markconverti.com/E234. Tayo, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. It was such a pleasure to hear your insights today and have you on Breakthrough Success.
Thank you for having me. Congrats on your success, and keep changing the world, Mark.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn